Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
This week's episode of the podcast.
Lads, we're back. We have just remembered that we have a podcast.
Yeah, we've remembered, and Emma has done all the work.
Done any work.
More work than me. Here, look what my jumper has. Sorry.
Look at what has?
My jumper.
It's got its little finger holes.
Oh, it's so
That's
comfy.
So cute. Lovely. Where'd you get that?
Sweaty Betty?
Very cute.
Yeah, no, let me see what's going on. I got pulled over by the guards.
You did. Can you hear that? A very stressful interaction with An Garda Síochána.
An Garda Síochána.
Yeah.
Me over. So here's the story. Last week, can't remember what day, driving Lily down to the childminder. Got up because it was Wednesday. Graham had to go somewhere and I had to do the childminder thing. And I was like, that's fine. Me and Lily gets in the car. It's like 10 past 8. We drive down. We go through, you know, the first roundabout at school near where we live. Right. Which is like a fake roundabout for anybody who doesn't know. It's like one of those in those little housing estates where it's like a little roundabout they could drive over. But anyway, to the left of that roundabout is a Garda car. And I slow down in preparation of stopping in case the Garda car decides they're going to come out in the roundabout or put on their blue lights, even though they're to the left of me and they don't have right way. There's no other car on the roundabout. There is no one coming towards the roundabout and there is no one to the right of the roundabout. So therefore, I have right of way as I am to the right of the Garda car, which means I have right of way. I yield. He doesn't come out. I continue through the roundabout. I then come to the next roundabout, which is immediately after that, after the school. There is there's no entry or exit to the left of that roundabout. There is only an entry or an exit to the right of that roundabout, straight through. So I stop because it's to the right of me to see if any car is coming. No car comes. In my rearview mirror, I can see this guard just piking my car over. You know when you're just like, they're curious about my car.
Yeah.
So I go through that roundabout and this guard puts on his blue lights and pulls me over. But he doesn't get out of his car. He doesn't pull up behind me. He pulls up right beside me and like blocks traffic. Like traffic have to go around him. So he's now like creating like a traffic issue. It's not safe. He then rolls down his passenger window, which has a Garda sitting in it. And the Garda driving the car is like, do you want to tell me why you didn't yield to me on the other roundabout? Would you want to explain that to me? And I know for a fact, if there was any civil unrest, I'd be dead. Because when I tell you, I couldn't give a fuck. Like, literally, he was like, hey.
Sarah will be shot immediately.
And then he was like, do you want to tell me why I didn't yield to the roundabout? And I said, excuse me? I said, sorry, I didn't have to yield. I said, sorry, I did yield. I yielded in preparation of something and everything I just explained. And he was like, but you didn't yield. And yield means coming to a full stop. And I was like, I'm going to stop you there now, sir. I'm going to stop you there. It's like, yield means to yield in preparation of stopping. You were on the left of that roundabout, so I didn't need to stop. I was like, I said, the question is, did you observe me not yielding or do you have footage of me not yielding? And he was like, well, actually, I observed you speeding. You need to slow down. I said, sorry, where was I speeding? I said, this road is 30 kilometers an hour. I was going 27.
It went from you didn't yield to now you're speeding.
Yeah. Then I was like, do you want to talk about the real problem is here? And he was like, I actually have the utmost respect for the Garda and I understand you have a difficult job. I was like, but clearly it's 8:15 in the morning. You're on a night shift. You're at the top of Ballyfermot where I live and I'm driving a very nice car and you thought I was a scumbag.
Yeah.
You thought that I was driving a nice car And I fit a certain like demographic of individuals that live around here, and you made a snap decision to pull me over.
Yeah.
And then when you pulled me over and I rolled down my window and I wasn't that person, rather than being like, on your merry way, you had to pick, picked that I didn't yield to you on a roundabout when you were to the left of it and you didn't have your blue lights on. And I was like, and I did yield because I slowed down in preparation of stopping. And unless you can prove that I didn't do that, do you want to let me out and drive on? Like, there was so much more to it. I went mental. And then anyway, eventually he buggered off, and then I rolled up the window and I went to drive off, and Lily just went under her breath, I feel really sorry for that guard. Sorry.
Lily is a pig lover. Lily loves the pigs.
I was like, what do you mean?
Lily is law and order. Lily likes rules.
Yeah, no, but there was no rules that I broke. So then when we were like driving down.
Saw your car.
Yeah.
And just made a presumption that you were some little dirtbag in a fucking expensive car.
You should have heard me. There was another guard in the car in the passenger seat, and he was like right beside me because the guy like kind of like blocked me in.
Yeah.
And I went, I called it. I said, does Silent Simon have anything to say?
Sarah Jane.
And that Silent Simon just looked down at his feet. He didn't make eye contact with me because he knew full well. He was like, this one's on one and she is not letting this go. I was like, what's your badge number? What's your badge number?
Did he give you his badge number?
No, he refused to give me his badge number.
Yeah, they always do.
And I was like, that's fine. I was like, actually, I was like, I'm well within my rights to ask for your badge number. I was like, but it's fine. I've taken the registration of the vehicle. And he was like, oh, have you now?
Yeah.
He was like, did you take that down while you were driving? And I was like, did I take what down while you were I said, I can remember a vehicle registration. Would you like me to call it out to you? Do you even know the vehicle reg of your car that you're driving? I went, when I say balubas, like, and then to the point where, like, I was like, are you done now? Are you finished? Like, at one point, I went to him, pick a mode. What is it? Like, and then when he stopped, I was like, are you finished now? And he was like, yeah. I was like, do you want to move out so I can go to work? Fuck out my way.
The fact that he said to you, did you take the down when you were driving? No, dumbass. I'm sitting looking at your car. I can read it.
When I got to my dad then that evening, I was telling my dad and my brother, my dad was like, is a guard with like a beard and blue eyes, a young guy. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, everybody in Ballyfermot was complaining about him.
Your dad, is it the guard with the beard and the sultry blue eyes and the long legs?
Yeah. So, yeah, my dad was like, everybody in Ballyfermot. And then Richie was like, he took my phone off me the other day and I had to go down to the guard station.
What did you take his phone off him?
I don't know.
What is going on in Ballyfermot?
Yeah, he was like, he took my phone off me today. And then Richie said he was on his bike a couple of weeks ago. And it was like cold out. So he had a scarf on. He has like this fleecy scarf. He had all his work gear on. Like he was clearly cycling home from work. And the guard like stopped him on his bike. And he said, leaned into me and pulled my scarf down off my face. He was like, he didn't even say to me, hey, could you move your scarf down?
The fuck?
Yeah. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. He said he just leaned into me, pulled my scarf down off my face. And then Richie was like, he was like, I didn't act the way you acted because I'd be pulled. He was like, I just like put a big smile on my face and was like, yeah, like how can I help you kind of thing? And I was like, I didn't curse. I was like, who do you think you're talking to? I was like, I'm a member. I'm a contributing member of this community. Gardy.
Ah, white woman privilege. Look at you there now.
Yeah, well, literally.
I have no news. Nothing is going on. Nothing wild or exciting. Same old shite. But probably just to say, we did our show. This is probably housekeeping.
Housekeeping?
Yeah. We did our show in the Laughter Lounge on the 15th of this month. And we had an amazing time. It was so much fun. And just to say thank you to absolutely everybody that came out and supported us. It was amazing. Thank you for buying merch. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sitting on those desperately uncomfortable seats. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to Chloe for organizing it. Thank you to all the staff that works in the Laughter Lounge. Lovely people. And yeah, we had a lovely time. We had a great time.
We had such an amazing time and everybody was so lovely.
They were.
And the staff at the Laughter Lounge were just so nice. So lovely. And they said really nice things about our audience and how polite and how lovely and how like the vibes in the room were just like,
yeah, it's support. Always good vibes, man. It's always like there's no, you know, antagonism. There's no ever like a bad vibe. Everybody's just having a good time. So that's really nice.
And no animosity, babes.
Yeah, we're all there to have a laugh, like, and talk about terrible things. Mainly to have a laugh. I also wanted to say, I was on the train with Graham last week. We were both going into town, and a lovely girl getting off the train told me she liked my podcast. And I said thank you, but I'm not sure if she heard me. But just to say thank you very much, and I wasn't being rude. I just had my earphones in, and she said something. And I was like, sorry. And then she kind of had to get off the train. So just to that lovely girl, I'm really sorry. I wasn't being rude. And thank you for listening to our podcast, because I kind of was thinking about it afterwards.
She was being rude. She sent us a message in the group chat.
I blanked her.
Yeah, no, honestly, thank you to everybody. And thank you to the people that brought us presents.
Oh, my God. So fucking sound. Thank you so much. Like, everybody's just lovely, and we're very grateful. And we had a lovely time. And we were only talking about this the other day on the live that we did, that we're going to potentially do a gig in Belfast. I'm just having a look at venues. So as soon as I know, I shall let you know.
Oh, that live we did today was so funny. Is that the Three Toilets live?
Yes.
Three Toilets.
Yeah, just thanks to everybody, man. We really, really appreciate it. We've just haven't been, like, I think we have been doing stuff, but we haven't been doing,
doing anything of any interest. Like, you just, and that's probably a shitty way to put it, but do you know what I mean? Nothing.
No, I've been down here. Like, I'm
cool.
I was up in Dublin and I really enjoyed it, and I had a lovely time with everybody.
I was at a wedding at the weekend.
How was it? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was really nice. We went to stay in the Knightsbrook, and I can't recommend it enough. The staff were so nice, and the hotel was lovely, and the food was fun. So yeah, that was really nice, and obviously the wedding was lovely, and the girl who got married was lovely, and it was really nice. All the Graham family were there. People didn't listen to the podcast. If you listen to Patreon, I'll tell you there, but I'll tell you a story about the best man.
And you tell it here?
I can't tell you on the main podcast now, because the speech he gave
was crazy.
Was it crazy? You know the way there was murder at my wedding because of the speech that was given?
Yeah. Would there have been murder if the speech was given also?
Murder? There would, yes. Like, yes.
Really?
Yes. The opening line of this, like best man speech, I was like, you're going to tell that story here? I'll have to tell you on Patreon, because I can't put it up at the end.
Can't put it up here. Okay, I have to make a
note. I like that. Like, as if the Patreon is like a secret, but people
could know, hear that. It's less people. Hold on, I'm going to make a note. So Patreon, best man story, because I really want to hear this best and story. Okay, that's crazy.
I'm off to Disneyland on Monday.
Woo!
See the big Mickey, the big old Mickey.
Mickey's all over the place. That's gonna be a good crack.
It is Mickey's. So I'm very much looking forward to my holiday. And in work, honestly, when I tell you I've tapped out today, I've seen a really
good
day, and someone looked over at me and they were like, you should have seen the way you were sitting when you were delivering this message to a very senior person in the team. They said, Sarah, I had my hands like this and I was lying back in my chair.
Yeah, you're done. You're like done.
I had my hands behind my head and I was like,
you know the holiday is coming and you're just fully like, I don't fucking care anymore.
Like, I was, is it parallel, horizontal? Horizontal. I was horizontal in the chair.
Sometimes I always remember that when you're in work and you've got like 3 or 4 days before holidays and you're like, I literally do not care what happens.
No.
Place could fall down around me. I do not care.
Yeah. And then in terms of, I haven't even been really following the fucking news.
Well, my mum and I have made a pact that we're not watching the news at the moment because everything is so dreadfully, terribly awful.
Okay.
But just to say, once again, it's free Palestine, it's fuck Israel, it's fuck the US. It is fuck all of them. It's fuck the UK, it's fuck France, it's fuck Germany, it's fuck anybody who is actively enabling this ongoing genocide to continue. Fuck every single one of them. I don't care about their politics. I don't care about anything else. If you are arming militant terrorists, because that's what they are, to slaughter children. Fuck you and fuck your country. So that's all I wanted to say. Because I will say, after we did our podcast, the Unpopular Opinion podcast did a show a couple of days after us.
Mm-hmm.
Those girls rocked up with Palestinian t-shirts, and I just want to say fucking fair play to them, because they have a big audience, and a lot of people with a very big audience have a tendency to shy away from that stuff and don't want to have an
That's that girl, the makeup artist.
They're so lovely, and just to say fair fucking play to them, because I was like, you know what, yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to talk about it. We can't back down, because once again, it's very disheartening to see so many huge names in the Irish music, comedy, podcast scene refusing to speak on this and getting advertising money from fucking McDonald's and Starbucks and not caring. You are from a country that has been through this. You are from a country that was colonized and is currently still colonized by the United Kingdom. And yet you won't stand on fucking 10 toes and stand up for it. So I just, fair play to those girls. The other night I saw pictures of them at the Laughter Lounge, and I just was like, fucking fair play to them. So that's all I wanted to say about that.
About that. That's all I had to say.
Because we haven't really been around for all the massive news things that are happening at the moment. But you know, you guys know where we stand and what side we stand on. You know how we feel about this stuff. You know we don't like the murder of women and children being used to further a racist agenda. So, yeah.
I hear Oasis are back or something. People are saying there's going to be reunion.
No, there's not.
It's all over the internet, and then Oasis.
I know they are. They're going to announce it. They're absolutely going to announce it. But I'm telling you now, that's not happening.
Oh yeah, no. Graham said to me, "Do you want to get tickets?" And I was like, Graham, no one's like they're not going to make it to the show.
That's not happening.
I said they might make it to like one or two shows. Do you remember the Stone Roses got back together and then they split up halfway through?
Fully, like, I just think it's like all these like rock stars are getting to an age now where they need money to continue the lifestyle that they've cultivated for themselves.
Yeah.
So a lot of these bands are getting back together, and people are like, "Oh, they're getting back together because they love each other." No, they're getting back together because they need to fund their mansions.
Does anybody think it's because they love each other?
Oh my God, it's not because they love each other. Those two fuckers hate each other. This is primarily for money. This is for money. Yeah. It's nice to see people so excited though. Like people are like real. I was never a big Oasis fan anyway, but people are. I like Daphne maybe, and I appreciate their music, but I'm not a huge Oasis fan. But it's kind of nice to see people getting so excited. Like people are Lauryn Hill getting on stage and doing six nights and coming on the stage on time, ready, than there is that Oasis actually putting this show together. Also, I heard a really funny thing last week. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about Lauryn Hill. And apparently she cancelled one of her gigs. She cancelled one of her gigs in America because she didn't have enough time to align her chakras.
Are you serious?
Just cancelled the concert the night of, like about 2 hours before. They didn't give her enough time to align her chakras.
What?
And then the Fugees cancelled all their American gigs. And she got on Instagram and was like, because basically they didn't sell tickets because people don't trust that they're going to turn up. People don't trust the Fugees are going to turn up. They're like, how many people get tickets to Lauryn Hill gigs? And she just doesn't turn up. Or she arrives 2 hours late on stage, plays for 15 minutes and fucks off. But then she got on Instagram and was like, this is the media skewing what's actually happening. They've made everybody believe that I won't turn up. No, girl, you've made everybody believe that because you don't turn up. You cancelled a gig because you didn't get time to align your chakras. I fucking love Lauryn Hill.
There goes back to that crystal shit I was sending you today.
Yeah, crystal shit's crazy. Hey, if anybody's into crystal, DM us.
Yeah, DM Emma. I don't want to hear about it.
I want to hear all about the crystals because that shit's unhinged.
My niece is into crystals. She knows I've talked to her.
She's so woo-woo.
Isn't she so woo-woo?
It's so woo-woo, yeah.
Like,
maybe we're missing out by not being woo-woo.
Yeah, my mom's a little bit woo-woo.
Your mom is very woo-woo. Your mom is very new agey.
fucking need you.
Very need. Hold on. I'm going to go get a drink and I want to show you the sticker my mother has. Hold on.
A few moments later.
Okay. Right, you ready for this amazing sticker?
Yeah. Where did she get that? Like, where did she get that?
It says, Jesus!
Jesus!
I don't know where she got it. I came down into the kitchen. Hold on. And I was like, oh, hold on. I just want to put it up properly. I kind of want to put it on my laptop. It's amazing. I came down and I was like, why do you have a sticker that says Jesus? And she was like, oh, someone got me a card from some like religious thing and the sticker was in it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Makes sense, Kathleen. I kind of want to put it on something. I want to put it on my laptop. Jesus loves me. Oh, yes,
he does.
He says to me now, don't be mocking.
Does she?
Oh, yeah, Shaw says that to me. Stop mocking. I'm like, I'm not mocking. It's hilarious. Even big sticker that says Jesus.
Jesus.
Listen to this. The Holy name of Jesus is all powerful. Said with reverence, it delivers us from many evils and obtains us for great blessings. Invoke the Holy name constantly. Keep this sticker on your person, in your home, or in your car. So just carry it around.
And just carrying this around will help you, the Jesus stuff.
It's 100% going on my laptop or one of my notebooks. Anyway, should we do this podcast?
Yes.
Hooray, we're back.
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans. It's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right, now all of your favourite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximilian's Bailbag, and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favourite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favourite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment, where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Anyway, this is week's episode of the Potty Pod.
So we're doing the podcast. This is a twofer. I'm doing a two-parter, primarily because Sarah is going away and I don't want her to have to do, and she's in work, so I don't want her to have to do a case for next week. Also, it's the court case of this is incredibly long. So this first half is going to cover what happened, and then the second part is going to be the court case and the outcome of the court case. So just a trigger warning for mentions of financial and domestic abuse and for mentions of suicidal ideation as well. So my case this week is the murder of Siobhan McLaughlin. My references are, so many, The Independent, Irish Times, RTE, Irish Examiner, The Sun, thefreelibrary.com, image.ie, The New World, what else, any different ones, Irish Examiner, Dublin Live, tons. I have a shit ton of references for this. So if anybody wants to look up any of the articles, please feel free to do so. I will put them in our little thingy bob. So this, we haven't done this in so long. This is crazy.
I know.
Because we're terrible podcasters. We're sure you'll have that. You'll have that, Sarah Jane.
Sure, listen, we are who we are and I ain't changing now.
So we're going to start. So Tuesday, February 28th, 2006, Niamh McLaughlin woke up late, sleeping through the alarm she had set to go to work as a receptionist in Ernst & Young. She had started working in the accounting firm in November of 2005. And during that time, she would drive to her sister's home in the Knocknashee estate in Goatstown, park her car there and then get the Lewis into the city centre, avoiding the manic morning traffic. So she would do that every single day. Her sister would let her park her car.
Niamh would usually arrive at her sister's home at 9 a.m. Her oversleeping meant she arrived at 9:35 a.m. She was rushing when she opened the door to Carn Row with the spare key her sister had given her. It was the normal routine. Go inside, say hi, and leave her car keys on the table. Nothing seemed amiss as Niamh walked towards the kitchen until she turned the corner and saw her three-year-old nephew, Daniel. Daniel was wandering around the kitchen by himself, and Niamh was confused. Why would he be alone? Where was her sister or her sister's husband? She picked Daniel up and called out for her sister. There was no answer, so she walked up the stairs to the bedroom. She called out again and still no answer. Niamh began to feel her blood run cold. She tried to convince herself that maybe nothing was wrong. Maybe her sister had fallen asleep. She could be exhausted from working. Niamh pushed down the handle to the bedroom door and the door stayed shut. It was locked. She tried a couple of times, but the door did not budge. As Daniel sat on Niamh's hip, she searched for a key, calling out her sister's name again. The panic was beginning to set in. She couldn't find a key and her sister was not responding. She kneeled down to look through the keyhole but couldn't see anything. She did the only thing she could think of doing and she called her father. Niamh waited, playing with Daniel and distracting him, but her fear was growing and growing. At 10:15 a.m., Niamh's father, Owen, and her mother, Deirdre, arrived at the house. Deirdre stayed downstairs with Niamh and Daniel as Owen made his way upstairs. He called out his daughter's name and knocked repeatedly, but with no answer, he put his shoulder against the door and broke it down. Inside was the family's worst nightmare. His daughter lay on the floor, not moving. He ran to her and put his hand on her head and her leg, and she was cold to the touch. The cord from a vacuum cleaner had been pulled over the ensuite door and was tied around her, and he noticed bruising around her neck. Devastated, Owen walked down the stairs to tell Deirdre and Niamh what he had found. His daughter, Siobhan, was dead.
Jesus.
So Siobhan McLaughlin was born on June 17th, 1967, to Owen and Deirdre McLaughlin. She was raised with her six sisters, Aisling, Niamh, Bridget, Anne-Marie, Deirdre and Caroline, and one brother, Owen Jr. Now, Siobhan's sister is a lady named Bridget McLaughlin, and she's actually a very well-known journalist. She wrote for the Irish Independent. She's a very cool lady. So she's quite well-known, and her sister Aisling is an actress as well. So they're kind of like an arty family. I'm sure most people, if you Google Bridget McLaughlin, you'll know her to see. Like, she's very beautiful. Not to talk about beauty because it's not important, but the entire family is fucking gorgeous. Like, insanely, like, blonde hair, blue eyes, stunning. Like, all
that's
of them.
What people say about my family.
Me too. They're all rides. That's what they say. So Siobhan's parents were born and raised in Waterford and Donegal, respectively, but they moved to Dublin to raise their family. Siobhan was a smart, precocious child and funny, so funny, her sister Bridget remembered. In 1989, Siobhan, aged 21, having trained in the Shelburne Hotel, began working as a chef in the Yamanuchi Pharmaceutical Plant in Mulhuddart. Is that how you pronounce that, Sarah? County Dublin. Siobhan brought new dishes to an Ireland that was very much still stuck in a meat and two veg era. She was innovative and cared about the flavours and the tastes of food. Like everything in her life, she wanted to do her best. It was here that she would meet Brian Carney. Carney, who was an electrical engineer, was 10 years Siobhan's senior. At 31, he believed that Siobhan was the same age as him. He said she was astute and confident and carried herself with the air of an older woman, comfortable in herself. Brian was immediately smitten with Siobhan, and after asking her out a number of times, she finally relented and went on a date with him. The two officially became a couple soon after, with Siobhan moving into the home Brian shared with his three-year-old daughter in Ballantyre. Brian was raising his daughter alone as his wife had passed away some months earlier following a very short illness. Siobhan and Brian decided to renovate the house in Ballantyre and sell it. Siobhan and Brian, they both had like an entrepreneurial spirit. And along with working in Yamanuchi, Brian owned a music shop. Siobhan, wanting to become her own boss, started a catering company. So they were like a business couple. A little business couple. I'll get the name of it for you. But he sold it in 2005, but I'll get the name of it for you. So the two continued to date until 1995, when Brian proposed and Siobhan accepted. This will be short-lived, however, and the relationship ended a few months after their engagement. The two remained friends, meeting up for dinner every now and again and texting each other sporadically. While Siobhan seemed to be moving on, Brian was not. He didn't date anyone else for 5 years. And when in 2000, they reunited and they became a couple again.
5 years.
5 years. He didn't date anybody. She kind of moved on and was dating people. He didn't date anybody. So in 2002, they got married. And 6 months later, their son Daniel was born. Brian and Siobhan loved to travel, and they had the finances to do so. On a trip to Palma in Spain, they decided they wanted to buy a boat, but instead fell in love with a property in Soler in Mallorca. The building was a guest house named Hotel Sablia, boasting 6 bedrooms and a warm outdoor pool, and it had a hefty price tag of 2.1 million euro. The couple were determined. Yeah, these people had money. Like, her entire family is from Dalkey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The couple were determined to own the boutique hotel, and upon purchasing it, began renovations almost immediately. Brian was able to do most of the work himself, including the electrical work. And Siobhan's eye for beautiful furniture and decoration had the hotel looking magnificent in no time. One review said, quote, "Hotel Salvia is one of the most beautiful small hotels in the Med." So Siobhan was a chef. She did all the cooking, all the meal prep, did all that stuff. And she would spend the summer seasons in Soler, looking after the hotel, throwing lavish barbecues, which became the talk of the small 12,000 population town. Like, these barbecues sounded fucking unbelievable.
Oh, really?
Like, she would have, like, 4-course barbecues. And, like, did everything by herself. They killed all their own animals. They did everything. So it just sounded amazing. Brian would spend time at the hotel, but made regular trips back to Ireland to take care of the various businesses he was involved with. So he had the music shop, and then he had that hotel, and then he was an electrician, and then he was part of a family business as well. So he had loads of, like, fingers in all his pies, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Siobhan loved Spain and enrolled Daniel in Spanish-speaking classes. Her hope was to raise Daniel in Soler. In an interview with Colin Coyle in the Sunday Times. So Colin Coyle did an article. It's so bittersweet because it's so weird. He did an article on the Sunday Times just, like, interviewing a young couple that decided to, like, up stakes and move to a different country and become entrepreneurs and do all these amazing things. And then it's like 3 years later, she's dead. You know what I mean? So Siobhan told the Sunday Times, quote, "I have a young baby, Daniel, and I didn't want to bring him up in Dublin. The weather, the traffic, the hectic pace of life and the lack of real community made my mind up. We had been holidaying in Italy for years and always dreamed of living in the Mediterranean and saw no reason to leave until retirement age when we would be too old to enjoy it." Siobhan came from a very large family. She had, like, 8 siblings. And did start to miss their company. So her sisters, brother and mother and father would visit whenever they could. Siobhan's sister Bridget did not think fondly of Brian. She considered him controlling and boring and never understood the attraction her sister had to him. "He disliked us enormously from the get-go because that's common practice with people. You like to isolate those close to the person," she said. "He never showed her love or affection. And I remember saying to her, 'God, Siobhan, what is the attraction?' Because she was so vibrant and so unique. And she said, 'He's not a womanizer. He doesn't drink much, doesn't smoke much. He's safe.' She wanted stability and a happy family life." So the hotel was a massive success. And as such, Siobhan and Brian decided to build a new house beside their current home in Goatstown. So where they were in Goatstown, they were, like, at the end of, like, an estate, and there was a big empty space. So they were like, "We're going to buy that land and we're going to build a house there." So they did. When the property was finished, they put it on the market, but then they withdrew it, like, almost immediately.
So they were like, "We're not going to live here. We're going to sell it.
But then they put it on the market and then took it back. As their spending increased, so too did Brian's trips to Ireland. He spent more and more time in Dublin, leaving Siobhan to run the hotel alone whilst trying to care for their son. Siobhan seemed overwhelmed and at times overworked and deeply unhappy. In December 2005, during the hotel's off-season, Siobhan returned to Dublin with Daniel. She met with her sister Bridget and told her that she and Brian were having troubles and she wished to separate from him. Bridget knew her sister so well and had become aware that she was not happy. Siobhan had stopped wearing her wedding ring and she was a little more withdrawn. Bridget, a former journalist for the Irish Independent, put Siobhan in contact with a solicitor she had become friendly with through her work. Siobhan met with the solicitor and confided in him that she wanted to move back to Ireland permanently. So at this point, she had already enrolled Daniel in a school in Dublin to start the following year. So she was like, I'm out. I'm doing this. She just told the solicitor about her marital problems with Daniel, and he suggested she keep a diary of her day-to-day interactions with him. Siobhan asked the solicitor if he could contact Daniel and ask that she could contact Brian and ask that she and their son Daniel live in the new house they had built and that Brian could continue living in the current home. So she was like, I want this house. He can have that house. The solicitor sent a letter stating such and requesting a legal separation. However, the letters were completely unanswered by Brian. So they were kind of living in the same house, but not communicating with each other in any capacity.
That is so unbelievably common.
Yep, that happens more than people could ever know.
Yep.
Like marriages of convenience. Like not to talk shit, but I know so many people from where my mum is currently that are in marriages of convenience.
I know so many people who, when I was in school, that's what their parents were like.
Yeah, they were like, we just stay together. Like, for now,
I have relatives that's what their life is.
Yeah.
No, I know at least 5 people right now that I could be like are living their lives like that.
Mm. It's crazy. Imagine living your life like that.
I couldn't. I also can't pretend.
No, I can't do that. I can't be like, I fucking hate you. Like, I can't do it. And the thing I always think as well, I think women in relationships especially check out a long time before they actually even end the relationship. So they've already done the emotional work of like, I'm done.
Where it was like an article and it was that essentially that women, like it's over for women times long before men even know us.
Before they even cop it. And then they're like, oh, I didn't see it coming. No, you weren't looking, sir.
Mm.
Yeah, women, I think, emotionally check out a long time before. Whereas I think men are quite spur of the moment. I feel this way for 15 minutes, therefore that's the way I'm going to feel, so I'm breaking up with you. Whereas women have, it has been like 2 months and they're like, I'm fucking done.
But I also think like men, like in the last week, I've heard a few different men use this sentence. And I don't know why it's irked me so much, but it has bothered me because I'm like, literally, they were talking about being content. And they were like, you know, my happiness is like a moment and being content is like a different thing. And it was like this idea of like when I get home and I close the door and my wife and my family are there, like my wife and my children, or in some cases there was like a guy who was like my wife because they had no kids, I'm content. And I don't know why, but I was like, that shouldn't be the only thing that makes you content. Like that to me is
like, you mean they should have something outside of their,
they were like it was like, it just really irked me because I was like, your entire need to be content, which is essentially you being happy and comfortable, is put on the shoulders of this other person.
Oh yeah, funny. Like,
it just like, I was like, oh,
dependency, brother.
Yeah, I was like, red flag.
That's one of the things about me in relationships, and I've said this to you before, I don't want to be the only thing that you have. I want you to have outside life, outside love, outside interests, outside things that you want to do. I don't want to be that thing, because then I become everything. And the stress of that, of being like, I have to be everything for you, and if I'm not everything, you're not happy. No, can't do it, brother. And maybe I'm terrible. I'm a terrible partner to be with, but I'm like, I can't. Like, it's important to be there for a person and it's important to be what they need at that time. But just to be like, if you're not there, I am deeply unhappy and miserable. No,
it's definitely
find something else.
There's a difference between being like, I'm there for somebody. I'm there for somebody when the chips are down and I'm there and we're doing this together and we're going to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as like, if I'm not around, someone's not capable of like getting on with things.
Yeah, no, I can't. I can't be that person. I will never be that person for anybody. I can't.
No.
It's like, that's how, and I also think that that's therapy for me. That's what therapy has taught me. If anything, therapy has taught me, because I think when you grow up in a household where an adult is dependent on you,
yeah,
it fucks you up. And when you get into a relationship, you immediately think you need to be that. And
oh, if you're, 100%.
If you're not, yeah, if you're not everything, you're nothing. And it's horrible. It's a horrible way to live. Like, it's so sad. And you see so many women who get ground down by that. Siobhan, knowing that Brian was refusing to engage with her on the separation, began making plans to start her life again without her husband. She saved money, which she hid under wrapping paper in a small cupboard where Brian could not find it. She hid her passport as well. So she kind of wrapped that up and hid that as well. So these are what she was doing now are all like absolute things that women who are being abused do.
My mother used to, and my mum wasn't abused, but my mum used to, like, when we were growing up, my mum used to say to me and Michaela, always make sure you have your own money.
Yep. Never. My mother always said to me, never depend on a man. And I fully am like that now. I refuse to depend on men. Like, I can't. To the point that sometimes when I see, this is terrible, I'm going to say this because it's a thought that I have. And I understand that not everybody thinks like this. I am very much removed from this genre of feminism where women think feminism is making a man pay for everything. Like, yeah. I am very far removed from that. I'm like, oh, he pays for my nails and my hair, and why are you with him if he doesn't pay for these things? Because I am with myself because I pay for those things.
Yeah, I've never had a
it is not 1945. I can have a bank account, I have a job. I am not asking a man to do any of that shit for me. I don't want them to do any of that shit for me. The odd time where it's like, hey, listen, I'll pay to get your nails done or your hair done. But no part of my brain ever goes, better ask this man.
Yeah, like Graham has never, never, never paid for me to get like my hair done or my nails done. He might at Christmas go to the hairdressers and get a voucher and be like, yeah.
That's fine. Like, that's totally fine. And I'm sure there's people that are going to have a go at me about this because I understand where they're like, well, they're there to be used. It's not that. It's I don't want
that's not the message of feminism.
No, and also I don't want, and I know it's because also the two of us are, this is getting deep. The two of us are very we're hyper independent. Like, yeah. We're hyper independent to a fault.
Yeah,
like it's detrimental to us sometimes where we take everything on and we don't ask for help, and then we have 12 nervous breakdowns in the space of 2 days. So I understand that that's not good either, but I just don't buy into this level as brand of feminism where you think you depending on a man for absolutely everything is a safe option, because it's not.
No.
If something happens.
Yeah, that's it. It's the other side of that is like when something happens, although this thing of like they're there to be used, but that's a trad, what you've like what you're doing is trad wifing. Like
you're trad wifing.
Like
I don't want I say this from the bottom of my heart. If I have a partner or if I have a boyfriend, I don't want anything from them financially.
No.
I don't want I'm as you always say, Sarah, you're choosing to be with that person. You don't need to be with that person.
Yeah, and Graham gets
choosing to be with that person.
Graham gets so like when I say that sentence, it hurts him and I'm
it's
like
true and it's healthy.
You're like, I don't need to be with you.
I don't need to be with you. I will be fine.
Yeah.
I will pay my rent. I will pay my bills. I will live my life. I will raise my child. I don't need to be with you. I am choosing. It is an active choice every single day to wake up and be with you. That's not insulting. That's realistic.
No.
Like this, like, oh my God, the love of my life fairy tale. Oh, blah, blah. Bullshit. That's bullshit. That's not real. And those relationships don't last. So I know we're preaching now, but like if you are a young person, yeah. A young woman listening to this and you're madly in love with a boy or a man and you're like, oh, they're everything, I'm going to fucking throw myself off a bridge if they break up with me. A, grow up, cop on. There are 75 bajillion gamillion of these men who are all the fucking same. Please know this, they are all the same. You will find another one and be financially independent. Please have your own money. Do not depend on these motherfuckers because they see something shiny and they're gone in 3 seconds. Just look after yourself. Look after yourself, please, because Siobhan was very smart. Siobhan started putting things in place where she knew she could walk away. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. But she was incredibly smart with what she was doing. So, OK, Where was I? Okay, so she took trips to the hairdressers and to the Citizens Information Centre to get as much information on legal separation as possible. She was excited about Daniel starting in his new school. Her friend said, although she was going through this very tumultuous time with her husband, Siobhan seemed content and resolute in her choices. And that's what I mean when I say women check out. Months before. They are emotionally done. They're just waiting for the chance for everything to be put in place that they can walk.
Yeah.
Siobhan was hoping for a new life, but tragically, this was not to be. So as Siobhan's body lay in her bedroom, her family were utterly hysterical downstairs. As Deirdre tried to soothe Daniel's confusion and tears, Niamh dialed 999. She was very distressed on the call, trying to explain the situation. So her mother took over and told the operator what they had found. Deirdre then called Brian. When he arrived, he looked distraught and he told Deirdre that he thought they would, quote, were going to be together forever. Yeah. When the Gardaí arrived, they spoke to Siobhan's parents and sister. They asked if Siobhan had attempted suicide before. Deirdre told them no, but she was concerned that Siobhan may have had taken medication. Now, I'm not sure why she thought that. There was an incident in 1999 where Siobhan went to St. John of God's because she had basically a breakdown. Like, she was working insanely long hours. She was stressed. She was just like, and it happens. People have emotional breakdowns. And they kind of go there and they reset and they get on with their lives. So I think maybe her family always had in the back of their head that something like this would happen.
Mm.
And that it would be, because I know if somebody has suicide, like, not that she had suicidal ideation, she just had a breakdown. That doesn't mean she wanted to die. It just means she had a breakdown. But I think when somebody ends up in your family in St. John of God's, there's always going to be that thing in the back of your head going, well, could this happen again? You know?
Yeah.
So when Gardaí entered the room, they found Siobhan's body. The cord from the vacuum had been snapped off and was around Siobhan's torso. On the floor beside her were pictures of her and Brian and her son. They could see ligature marks around her neck. And one Gardaí walked back towards the bedroom door. And when he did, he saw a key laying on the ground. It was the key to the bedroom. And it seemed to him as if the key had been pushed back under the door, meaning the door had been locked from the outside.
Dun, dun, dun.
So as forensic investigators arrived at the Kearney home, Siobhan's remaining family were now on their way. Bridget said Brian's behaviour was bizarre. He sat down and started hyperventilating, she said. It was really strange behaviour. Bridget said Brian told the doctor that was called that his heart was beating out of his chest, but he was not really showing any emotion and he did not shed a tear. As Gardaí and forensics carried out their work, the state pathologist, Mary Cassidy, arrived to examine Siobhan's body. The Gardaí spoke to Siobhan and Brian's family and told them there would be a 2-day media blackout on this case. They asked that neither family speak to the media or to friends, co-workers, etc. until they were instructed that the blackout had been lifted. So the reason they did this, what case was in the news at the same time? Hold on one second. I can't remember her name.
Rachel Kalali. Is that right?
Rachel O'Reilly, then she would have been, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she had been murdered a number of months before this happened. And unfortunately, there was no media blackout and a lot of shit went wrong with that case, including him going on national television and pretending that he didn't kill her.
The Late Late Show.
Yes. So the Gardaí immediately were like, media blackout. We're going to figure out what we can before this gets out. And actually, the Barry White did a shite. He adjudicated over that case, and he also adjudicates over this current case that's going on, and it's the same solicitors for both cases. So he keeps calling Siobhan that girl's name.
Oh God.
Yeah. So it's a mess. The Gardaí spoke to Siobhan and Brian's family, as I said. Media blackout. Don't talk. So after speaking to Brian, the Gardaí let him leave the property and he went to stay with his mother in Dundrum along with Daniel. Now, that same day, they went to his house, his mum's house in Dundrum, and asked him for the clothes that he had been wearing that morning.
Yeah.
His mother had somehow watched them. Yeah. So as Siobhan's family reeled in the aftermath of her death, what the Gardaí had initially believed to be a suicide was now becoming something much more sinister. On Thursday, March 2nd, a 49-year-old man was brought in for questioning by Gardaí. Due to the media blackout, they were not given any information on who this man was. He was released that night at 10 p.m. without charge. It was now known that Siobhan's murder was being treated, or death was being treated as a murder staged to look like a suicide. And as such, the Gardaí began carrying out door-to-door inquiries. They asked anyone who knew Siobhan well to come forward and speak to them. I think one of the most sinister parts about this is, remember that case I did at the live show, our first live show, about that dentist who faked his wife's suicide? The picture thing. Like, this guy did the exact same thing. He put pictures around her to be like, oh, she wanted to look at her family before she died.
Sound like a common thing when people are killing
them. It has to be. Like, the fact that two cases I've done of men doing this shit, both of them involved them thinking, oh, I have to make her look sentimental. It'll look real if she's sentimental. It's so strange. Like, so strange. The Gardaí had a chief suspect, but were refusing to elaborate any further. They had received information from neighbours that placed the chief suspect in a car in the driveway of Siobhan's home at the approximate time she had died. The alibi provided by a member of the chief suspect's family was in direct contradiction to the information the Gardaí received regarding his whereabouts on the morning of February 28th. During a press conference, the Gardaí told the suspect that he needed to know they were closer and closer to catching him. As Siobhan's, as Siobhan's family awaited the results of her autopsy, they began to plan her funeral. Brian then delayed the funeral by 10 days because he requested a second autopsy be carried out by like an independent doctor. It became apparent that a rift had formed between Siobhan's family and Brian Kearney. A death notice was placed in the Irish Times that read, McLaughlin, Siobhan Therese, Goatstown and Leisha of Hotel Salvia Soler, February 28, 2006, devoted mother to little Dan, beloved daughter of her heartbroken parents, Deirdre and Owen, darling precious sister to Bridget, Deirdre, Aisling, Caroline, Anne-Marie, Owen and Niamh, most dear friend to her sister-in-law, Ali, brothers-in-law, Alan and Curtis, and desperately missed by her little nieces and nephews, Ava, Julia, Grace, Max, Thiermuth, Kevin, Tommy and George, and all her beautiful and true friends. Rest in peace. Removal tomorrow in her family, from her family home to the Church of Assumption. Her family used Siobhan's maiden name and ensured there was no mention of her husband, Brian Kearney. On Sunday, the 12th of March, Siobhan McLaughlin's body was laid to rest in Redford Cemetery. Her devastated family held hands and sobbed as the priest spoke about Siobhan's kindness, her talent, her tenacity and her love for life. A picture of her little boy was placed on a stand beside her coffin. It was noted that the McLaughlin and Kearney family sat on opposite sides, not interacting at all.
So they went?
They went, yeah. Well, her little boy didn't go because obviously it was too much. But the family went and they sat on one side of the pew and the Kearney sat on the other side.
What I mean by that is that that's just fucking neck like a jockey's bollocks.
Yeah. The Gardaí were confident they were closing in on Siobhan's killer when mobile phone evidence proved that the suspect was not where his alibi had placed him, but was in fact at the Kearney residence on the morning of the murder. So they just pinged his mobile phone and were like, you're here, motherfucker. You're lying.
Yeah.
The Salvia Hotel that Siobhan had worked so tirelessly on remained open, with Brian Kearney travelling there in April 2006 to get it ready for what he believed would be a busy summer period. When word of Siobhan's death spread, bookings all but disappeared, leaving the hotel completely empty.
Because he's a fucking murderer.
Yeah, on June 30th, it was reported by the Irish Independent that there had been a, quote, staff exodus at Siobhan's hotel, with five of the six employees walking out. The employees had been hired by Siobhan, and it was believed they did not want to continue working at the hotel without Siobhan's presence. Also, they didn't like Brian at all. They said when he turned up, there was always like a weird atmosphere. So at the beginning of August, the Gardaí sent their file to the DPP requesting that their chief suspect be charged with the murder of Siobhan McLaughlin. On the 30th of May 2007, 15 months after Siobhan's murder, Brian Kearney was arrested and charged with the murder of his wife. He was remanded to Cloverhill Prison and pleaded not guilty at a very brief hearing. And apparently her family went to the hearing and he stood chewing gum the entire time and just like wouldn't look at them. On the 6th of June, he was released on €55,000 bail, which was paid by his brother. He was told to surrender his passport and to do regular check-ins at his local Garda station. On June 22nd, the book of evidence was brought forward and Brian Kearney's trial for the murder of his wife, Siobhan, will begin in early 2008. So that is the first part of the story of the murder of Siobhan McLaughlin. And next week, I'm going to cover the trial and what her poor fucking family went through and how he's a fucking coward piece of shit that dragged these people through a fucking trial. Like, it's so frustrating. I understand everybody's allowed their day in court and everybody is innocent until proven guilty. But like, to do that to somebody and then drag their family through hell and make them get on the stand, it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you, you absolute sociopath? Also, this case is a lot to do with money and the idea of wanting people to know that you have money. And then when you don't have that anymore, you start to fall apart. So it's desperately sad. But yeah, that's the first part. And next week's episode I will cover the second part.
And is the court case very long?
Yeah, it's really detailed. It's really, really long. Because basically his team were trying to prove that she took her own life. So they played the, oh, she's crazy though. Isn't she crazy? Remember that one time she went to St. John of God's? That means she's a crazy woman.
Okay.
And the other team are like, no, this was staged and he definitely did it. Like, it's clearly obvious that he did it.
Like, these people.
It's clearly obvious that he did it. Like, the slipping the key under the door thing, I was like, you stupid motherfucker. Why would someone who's going to take their own life lock the bedroom door from the inside and then take the key out and put it on the ground?
Why? Like,
wouldn't you just leave the key in the door? Like, what are you talking about?
Why would you lock the door if you were going to kill yourself?
Also of all the
ways go on.
The idea that she pulled the cord off the vacuum cleaner, threw it over the ensuite door, and tied it around herself. It's the fucking, it's so dumb. It's so dumb. And like, his team were like, but she was crazy. She's crazy, right? She's a crazy lady. Yeah, she's crazy. The hysterical woman argument.
Like, how high is her ensuite door?
Not that high. And that's what comes into play in the trial.
Like, is my...
They're like, this is ridiculous.
My standard housing in Ireland, even though they lived in a big house, like, usually you're talking like 8.5 foot for a ceiling. Mm-hmm. So you're talking like 7 foot for like a door.
Yeah. And it's like the whole idea of her pulling the cord off the vacuum cleaner. Why would she do that? They're ridiculous. But anyway, we'll get into that more in next week's episode, and I'm very happy to be back. Actually, this is fun.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy to be back. But you know what we never talked about? We should talk about, you know, the very demure, very cutesy.
Yes.
Some random cunt in America trademarked her slogan. So she
got
any money off the slogan? Like, he trademarked. You know, the like, what does she say? Very demure.
Why would he do that?
Because of money and because people are evil. Like,
she's like, I'm so happy for her. I haven't seen her around for, she's been around for years. Like, that girl was doing videos whilst working in a filling station. Like, she's been around for years and years and years, and I'm so happy for her because she was able to pay for her full transition, which is incredible. And like, she was getting paid, and then some motherfucker comes along and does that.
Yeah, Jules LeBron is her name, and some white cis asshole has trademarked. So like,
that's awful.
And yeah, it's a whole, now there are people saying that, like, even though he's trademarked it, it's obvious that it was yours. So this person doesn't have that type of money.
No,
like,
and like, it's so awful because it's, I was so happy to see her getting, and listen, these things, these like memes, you can only make so much money out of them as quickly as possible. Like, yeah, you got to make your cash ASAP, because that shit's going to disappear. It's like, it's literally the episodes of The Simpsons where Bart does the I didn't do a thing. That's what it is. Like, every single person who makes it, like that Hawk 2 girl, like, she got in, made as much money as she possibly could, as quickly as could. Like Brittany Broski with the kombucha girl thing.
Yeah.
Got in with that and then marketed herself and made herself something else. Like, you have to get in. But that motherfucker.
I fucking hate the Hawk 2 thing.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I feel like conservatives find it funny. You know the way there's like no funny conservatives? And I will say that as a blanket statement. You motherfuckers aren't funny. You don't know what irony is. You don't know what humor is. You think the pinnacle of comedy is saying my pronouns are kiss my ass. Like, you think that's or the pinnacle.
My pronouns are I'm an American.
My pronouns are USA. Yeah, like, you think that's the pinnacle of comedy? You guys have Joe Rogan. Like, that's where you're at. You've got Joe Rogan who gets on stage and sweats like a and looks like a testicle and just makes jokes about trans people. Like, that's your level of comedy. Do you know what I mean? So
honestly,
like, I think people
the live show when we got asked who would chew.
Yeah.
I regret that I didn't say Joe Rogan.
Yeah, it's fine. You can say it now. You would chew him.
Would chew him.
Like, but yeah. Go on, listen, I'll let you go. 20 to 10.
You're not.
Yeah. I'm always annoying you.
Sorry, that is not.
Okay.
If you're seeing your pass as disabled when trying to access your tickets in your Apple Wallet, it may be for one of the following reasons. You may have purchased a ticket from a third-party platform. No. Your phone may not support the latest iOS, which is required to add tickets to your wallet. No. You may be attempting to add tickets that are already in someone else's wallet. Any tickets purchased from an individual Ticketmaster account
can only be.
I bought tickets for Wicked.
Your mom doesn't have your one, does she?
No. Any tickets purchased from an individual Ticketmaster account can only be linked to one Apple ID. If you need to send another fan a ticket, no, I don't. Head to the Ticketmaster app to find your ticket. Ensure you've upgraded your phone to the latest version of our app. I literally only downloaded the app the other day.
What the fuck? So can you not see your tickets now?
I can, but it says they're disabled.
What? That's insane. So your mum definitely doesn't have them on her phone, no?
No, God, no. My mum's a tick. She doesn't know what to do. download the app. So I'm going to... For Republic of Ireland, I already have it. View in wallet.
I hate Ticketmaster so much. Hate.
This like is telling me that another like, but it's not. It's my Ticketmaster account.
What the fuck? Graham doesn't have them on his phone or anything, does he?
By accident. No.
Your Ticketmaster account is not linked to his phone, is it?
No. Like, and my account is linked to my email address, which is linked to my Apple account. So it's not like any of that is different.
What the fuck?
I'm going to sign out and then sign back in.
Yeah, good idea.
That works.
Good idea.
And... maybe I'll remove them from my wallet.
Yeah, and so maybe try and re-add them back in then.
Also, when they look like this on the fucking wallet, how do you scan that?
You can't scan it. There has to be a barcode.
Let me get into my wallet. Fucking technology, man. Will I tell you the story that the... best man told?
Yeah, we'll do a little outro first and then you can tell me, okay? Everybody, thank you so much for listening this week. We're very happy to be back. Thanks to Colin for editing this and thanks to Sarah Jane for being very sexy.
Are you fucking...
You there?
Awards. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, what'd you say?
Hello.
Okay. Consider Ian accepting an award at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Thanks to everybody.
Thanks to Jesus. Thanks I first and foremost want to thank Jesus for being always there for me.
For always being there for me.
I'd like to thank my haters for propelling me forward. But yeah, no, thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll be back next week. And Colin is writing a new song for the podcast. I don't know if it's going to be in this episode, but I think it might be in the next episode.
I love Willie.
Very funny. It's very, very funny. No, it should be. You love Willie's. I don't, though. So it'll be like, Sarah loves Willie's.
I love Willie's. Bye, everybody.
Buddy, bye.
Close approximation to a HR violation when I'm wanking at work, wanking at work. Why, wanking at work, wanking at work. Why?